come listen to our radio show.
Mixtape Radio, every Wednesday night at midnight.
Until 3 a.m. Thursday morning.
Featuring the newest and the best in indie, alternative, and experimental music.
With your hosts, Jeff
and Christine.
So tune in. It's really gonna go.
When was the last time Jeff was on that show? Well, anyway, it's 6 o'clock. Okay, it just turned 6 o'clock, which means legally we can say this is WUSB Stony Brook. And since it's Tuesday evening, that means it's time for Off the Wall. And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday evening. Yeah, you know, it's just best you don't know what we have to go through to put this show together sometimes. Wow, the technological challenges. But it's an exciting night. We have all kinds of activity here in the studio. As you may be aware, we're back live this week. We were away for 2 weeks. Last 2 weeks, because of some issues, which we'll get into in a moment. Joined tonight again by Kyle.
Hello.
Welcome back.
I feel welcome. Thank you for having me.
And, well, thanks for coming. We were both just up in Canada, actually. And, boy, do we have some stories to tell. But the last couple of weeks, if you were listening to this particular program, you would have heard us in Albania, because that's where we were this spring. And that was, we listened to the show, actually. We had a copy of it, and we listened to it, and sort of went back down memory lane and remembered those good old days when we wandered across the Montenegrin border into Albania. And we're welcomed with open arms.
Yeah, isn't that amazing? I loved listening to it, and knowing that it was being aired is just really, really cool. Special for us. We enjoyed a lot of new experiences and got to build our travel skills, get confident about being in strange places and having to put faith into strangers.
Mm-hmm. And the strangers almost always came through for us. And like I said, we were always welcomed whenever we went to one of these strange and foreign lands. And, well, gosh darn it, it's I just wish the day would come when we had that kind of treatment coming into our own country, but I'll get into that a little bit later, I suppose.
Indeed.
We really had, oh boy, we had some adventures up there.
It makes Albania seem like a walk in the park.
Almost literally a walk in the park. But we have so many things going on tonight. This is the night that the long summer break is finally over. Now, as we mentioned a few weeks ago, we had some issues again getting into the country with the Starbucks dancers who are in a vital part of the entire ceremony of narrowing down what will eventually be the first Starbucks I ever set foot in. And we've been at 16. We've been holding at 16 since July. And tonight we bring that down to 8. That was supposed to be 2 weeks ago we did that, but because of the immigration problems. I told them not to leave. I told them not to go back overseas and do the summer tour thing. I just knew there'd be issues getting back into the country. But tonight we bring it down to 8. And it's kind of exciting because I've gotten to know almost every single one of those cities, the 16, that are potential Starbucks cities. In fact, we even went to one, but we didn't cheat. We didn't go to the Starbucks or pass by the Starbucks in Toronto, but we were in the city of Toronto.
Yeah, I don't think that we saw any Starbucks while we were in Toronto.
Well, we saw them. I saw them on the street, but I didn't make a conscious effort to say, is it on this street? Is this the one? I try not to pay any attention.
Right. Yeah, that's more accurate.
Yeah.
I mean, we didn't find a particular one that perhaps was on the list. We didn't verify any of them. There were Starbucks in Toronto, but we didn't make note of them in the context of this
The product. Thing with Starbucks in Toronto, though, they're not the only chain like you see around
Correct.
Here. There's a lot of different ones.
There's some good ones out there.
Mm-hmm. So it doesn't quite hit you over the head nearly as much. And yes, it would have been cheating if I had gone and looked at one but not looked at the other 15. That's in the rule book somewhere, and I made sure not to let that happen. In fact, at one point, if you remember, I closed my eyes while we were driving, which I know upset you because I was driving at the time, but I didn't want to see the Starbucks and think that maybe it was the one that made the final 16. And we got through it okay. I don't think we really had to.
Yeah, I was only upset when you were careening off the road through that pasture.
Yeah, again, I think that might be a bit of an exaggeration because there wasn't a curb, okay? And if there's no curb, then it's okay to drive in the grass.
Yeah, there wasn't a line either, as I recall. It was sort of a side road.
It's pretty much open
okay,
to interpretation.
Right. I'll let you have
it. Canada's different. It's very different than over here. So we have that coming up. That'll be coming up soon. And in addition to everything else, tonight's a fundraising show. And Finn is stationed in the other room, ready to take phone calls. I want to make this nice and simple. Folks, please support the radio station, because the radio station exists for programs like this and so many others, has been around for so many years, and will be around in the future, but only if people support it. So your phone calls to 631-632-WUSB, 631-632-9872, help to keep the place going. Now, the first wave of people perhaps can just pledge based on that. But if you want something in return, in addition to the radio station, we have all kinds of premiums that we're offering, including WUSB T-shirts and caps and mugs and various other articles that people can obtain. But what we're offering here tonight from Off the Wall that we will not be offering on any other radio show is a compilation of 40 of the most popular talks that took place at the Next Hope in DVD format. Every talk gets its own DVD, and actually you'll be getting more than 40 DVDs because some of them span more than one DVD, so you might be getting something like 45 or 46. For a pledge, and get this, a pledge of only $75. And that's well below what we have offered this for in other radio stations, and certainly far below what it's offered for on the website where we sell these things. And we do sell them. If you call 631-632-9872, pledge $75, you will get, in the mail, 40 DVDs from The Next Hope.
These DVDs are really interesting. You can stream the audio, of course. A lot of the talks have been posted online. But to actually get the DVD, it allows you to sit and actually watch what they're talking about. In a lot of circumstances, that's crucial. If it's a specific discipline, the visual aid really helps. So just watching all of these videos is very, very, very educational. The audio is still incredibly powerful as far as conveying the experience, but I think watching is sort of an added bonus because you get to see, you know, maybe what they're pointing to on a projector or an example. They might be doing an experiment on stage. So, yeah, this is a really, really good package that you've got.
And someone's calling in already for it, and I want to congratulate that person for being intelligent enough to realize a good deal when he or she hears one. 631-632-9872. The question now is what happens when more phones ring and Finn has to answer them all. I want to see that from my vantage point. 631-632-9872. Remember, $75 pledge gets you the 40 DVD set. I'm not kidding. That's a lot. That's some radio shows, some TV shows. You have to pay that much for one DVD. Finn, you're in
the most recent talks on the most recent Hope.
Oh, we're being questioned on. Yes. It's the Next Hope, meaning the last one, the most recent one.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yes.
Is that confusing? No. Well, 2010, I guess, is probably the best way to say it, which is this year.
Right.
They took place a mere months ago. A mere months ago. How did he say that?
Several months ago.
Well, it was July, August, September. Yeah.
It was the most recent Hope, and mm-hmm. it was titled The Next Hope.
Right. Not the most recent Hope. That's a different Hope.
Yeah.
The Next
that's,
Hope.
That's okay.
I don't think
enough.
I'm making this confusing. I think other people are coming in here making
quite
this
clear.
Confusing.
They're just interpreting it mm-hmm. incorrectly. But absolutely, these are the current editions of mm-hmm. Hope Talks.
Right. Right. Yeah. Whew, okay, well, 631-632-9872, please keep those calls coming in because that's what keeps the place going. We have some news to go over quickly. We want to read some letters and other fun things like that. Arianna Huffington is coming to Stony Brook. How about that? The co-founder and editor-in-chief of the Huffington Post will be at Stony Brook University October 25th to talk about her latest book and take audience questions. A 45-minute talk with Huffington will be moderated by Howard Schneider, the dean of the university's School of Journalism. And the event is sponsored by Think Magazine, which is a student-run publication. This publication won a nationwide contest to host Huffington on her book tour, kind of like the nationwide contest we're having with Starbucks, except in reverse. These people actually want her to come here, and we're sort of imposing ourselves on various places around the world. This talk will take place at 8 p.m. on October 25th, the main stage of the Stoller Center, open to the public on a first-come, first-served basis. So start lining up now. It's going to be a ton of fun. Things happening here at Stony Brook. What else is going on? This is what I read today in the news, and it's kind of driving me crazy. A German high-speed train, which is expected to offer a direct service from London to Frankfurt starting in 2013, was unveiled today at London's St. Pancras Station following safety test in the Channel Tunnel. German rail operator Deutsche Bahn said it also intended to run trains from London to Amsterdam in the Netherlands. The network will also serve Brussels in Belgium, the Dutch port of Rotterdam, and Cologne in Germany. The Siemens-built ICE3 train, which has a maximum speed of 200 miles per hour, 320 kilometers per hour, will undergo further test runs and approval measures to use the Channel Tunnel. You know, the Eurostar uses the Channel Tunnel right now. Now there's another train that's going to be going through there, and another high-speed link between cities in Europe. This time as far out as London. Recently, we heard a story about the longest rail tunnel being opened up in Switzerland. They just keep getting better and better. China's building trains everywhere, all throughout Asia.
That's amazing.
And here, while we're away, while we're up in Canada, here are the meat-headed responses to just a second rail tunnel from New Jersey to Manhattan being canceled because, well, we just can't afford it. And this is going to have the effect of putting more cars on the road and not having enough mass transit for the area. And that's between a populated state and a major city, let alone connecting different cities or going out throughout the country. It's sad. You know?
Or allowing another country to use an existing line.
Mm-hmm.
That's uncanny because right now in Europe they have, you know, you're in one part, generally you have one type of train for this city, but now the German train is connecting cities completely outside of Germany.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
brilliant.
It is.
They're expanding, allowing other carriers to use your networks if you're talking phones or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
That's brilliant. They're actually allowed to use the rail as a third-party option, you know, and they have a really fast link. And that's brilliant. That's so much for competition, and you know, we can't even get a link with our own trains in our own country.
Ridiculous. And Canada also is woefully behind in high-speed rail. They really need to have more links, more connections. There's only one train a day between Montreal and New York. Only one. And it takes about twice as long as it does to drive. There's something wrong with that. We can do so much better. And it's
absolutely.
Just sad. It's sad to see. Why? Why do they always get the high-speed rail lines over there? What do we have to do? And we have a president in power now that allegedly is for all of this, but yet it's like pulling teeth, getting local governments now to go along with it. I can't imagine why. Why are trains seen as bad things? You got to pay for these things. You got to inject some money into your infrastructure if you want there to be an infrastructure. You have to invest. Look at what's going on overseas right now. You have, and some of it's pretty disturbing actually, but some of it is really kind of interesting. Like in France, for instance, there have been these strikes for the last several days. In the millions of people now are striking in the streets. Why are they striking? Because the President Sarkozy has said. In the year 2018, 8 years from now, the retirement age will have to be raised from 60 to 62, 2 years. And the effect that has had on the people has been unbelievable. People are outraged by this. What we would see as kind of a minimal sacrifice. What is our retirement age? Do we even? It's like 65 or something, isn't it?
Generally, it's 65. Some industries have different retirement ages.
2 years, and the reason for this, I'm not saying I agree with it, but the reason being given is that people are healthier now, they're living longer, so they can work longer, and yeah, I could see where that could be seen as kind of not very nice to people that want to retire. Still, when you think of it, there are people out there in the street demanding their rights, demanding their pensions, and the prospect of just an additional 2 years in 8 years, there's plenty of time to prepare for this. Because of all the budgetary issues and because people are living longer, it's pretty easy to justify. I think if something like that happened here, people wouldn't even bat an eye, let alone take to the streets and start burning cars. But that's exactly what's going on over there now because people are so used to having things that they need, that they want. They're used to having high-speed rail. They're used to having pensions and unemployment benefits and everything else, social welfare, things that will take care of them. And it's a different culture completely.
And they're not afraid. They're unafraid of their employers and being political in the face of their employers. You know, their employer is where they work, but this is a political issue that their employers are sort of the day-to-day realization of that, right? I mean, their employer is obviously the manifestation of the government or countrywide retirement age. We mm-hmm. don't have a compulsory retirement age in this country, but some industries have it. Some industries, you know, we don't in other places. The interesting thing is it's building. People I saw out in front of refineries were burning piles of tires, and it's building. The more people protest and they picket or refuse to go to work, more you find other industries. Then we see pictures of the garbage collectors leaving garbage in the streets, the pumping stations with no fuel, the airport has no fuel. They got like a couple days left. I mean, just as people realize it, the sentiment builds. It's not like people protesting and refusing to, they're not cowering against their employers and afraid to cross the picket line or they cross the picket line and there's no fear and that kind of thing. It's like, it's important to everyone, and the more the information spreads, the more people protest. That's brilliant.
They're not afraid of the police. They do battle with the police. The police throw tear gas. The protesters throw tear gas right back at the cops. I'm not saying I endorse any of these tactics. I'm not saying what side I'm on. If I agree, I see some bullying tactics. For instance, a few weeks ago in Italy, truck drivers were very upset that more truck drivers were going to be hired because they kind of have a cornerstone on the market where they have their licenses to drive their trucks. It's worth a lot of money to them. If more people are brought in, it's worth less money to them. Seems like kind of an anti-competitive way of doing things, but there's also merit to it. Point is, regardless of how you feel about this, people feel they have rights. They want to hold on to their health benefits. They want to hold on to their employment benefits, their retirement benefits, whatever it is that they're used to. They demand it from their government. They're willing to shut down the refineries and have the whole country run out of fuel before they give in on this. And I just can't think of anything in this country where people are that passionate. And so that's why we don't have things like high-speed rail. We don't have national health care that actually does something. It's because we don't have that passion, and we don't have...
I think we're spineless.
We are pretty spineless.
I will go that far. Compared to these examples,
mm-hmm.
absolutely. We're spineless. We're worried about our employers. We're scared of our government. We won't talk to our politicians. We won't get control of these things. I mean, there's no excuse. It just makes... I just feel so ashamed to look at this,
mm-hmm.
see the might and the sense of control over your own future and your own well-being. Whereas we want people to tell us and hold our hand and, like, we're afraid and, well, we have to keep going to work and we don't want to band together and form unions at work. We want to just keep our job security and have our little suburbia, whatever it is. Maybe in the city you have your little spot and that's it. I mean, come on.
Yeah, we can do so much better than this, and it just involves having a little fortitude, standing up.
We're smarter than this.
Speaking out, you know, doing... demanding the things that you want and you need, and finding other like-minded people. Now, I mentioned there are some disturbing things going on over there as well, and there certainly are. Angela Merkel's recent remarks about multiculturalism, the end of the road for multiculturalism in Germany. We don't want any more foreigners. We just want German culture and German speech. A little bit disconcerting hearing that kind of talk. And it goes along with a lot of the anti-Muslim and anti-Roma and anti-immigrant sentiment that's pervading the entire continent over there. It's scary. It's scary, but there are a lot of people there that are standing up against it. And again, that's going to make the difference. That's going to make all the evil go away. And really, you know, it is the anti-Muslim sentiment that we're seeing everywhere around the world. And it's frightening because people say they're afraid of Islamic terrorism. This is something to really be afraid of because it's a lot more powerful.
I see so many parallels between these kind of measures in places like Holland and in Europe and Germany, like with what Merkel's saying. There's so many parallels to like the immigration issue here with Mexico and our border to the south.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, we don't hear anything about that with Canada, but even there, I mean, you know, we're basically setting this example, and I feel like it's being picked up, this sentiment of nationalism, or at least like xenophobia,
mm-hmm.
and basically like generalization with people. But anyway, go on. I just wanted to add that.
No, they're very
see some parallels.
Good point. And of course, it also extends over here, much anti-Islamic sentiment. Now, here's something local. Now, I don't know what this means yet, if this is going to turn into some whole big issue again, because it always seems to. We all heard about the quote-unquote Ground Zero Mosque. It's not Ground Zero, it's not a mosque, but we all heard about it. I haven't heard much about it recently. I'm not sure where the controversy stands, but whatever. Now there's something local, an Islamic congregation's contentious plan to demolish its 29-year-old Selden Mosque. Selden is right near here, by the way. And build a larger facility is up for approval at the Brookhaven Town Planning Board's meeting, which took place yesterday, and I don't know what happened. I'm sorry. The 400-member Islamic Association of Long Island wants to build an 8,000-square-foot house of worship on Park Hill Drive, where the association's 5,600-square-foot mosque is located. So basically, it's going from about 6,000 square feet to 8,000 square feet. You know, it's not really that big of an expansion, but apparently it's contentious. I mean, do we hear about every time a church expands? And they sure do expand a lot. Do we hear every time a firehouse expands? Because they're expanding more than anything, I think. I don't know why. There are more fires. Schools expanding, libraries expanding, people expanding. Everything's expanding. It's the American culture. Expansion. Embrace it. Except if you're Islamic, then you kind of shrink a little bit. Mosque members have said the new building would allow the congregation to have one large prayer room, which the current mosque lacks. Members have also said the footprint of the new building would not be bigger than the current mosque. But neighbors of the mosque, say the area is choked by traffic caused by the facility and that will only worsen if it expands. Tahir Qureshi, who attends the mosque, said he hopes the two sides can reach an accord. Maybe they will listen to us. Maybe we can all become friends, he said. Wow, that guy's dangerous. so I don't know what happened at that meeting, but it's just, it bothers me to see an article like that. It came from Newsday, it's basically saying that any time a mosque expands, it's going to cause problems and fear and prejudice of all sorts. You just don't see articles like that about any other house of worship. So it happens here, too. And we're going to keep an eye on that as well. Okay, now what I'd like to do is quickly delve into mail. We have so much to go through, and we have a couple of stories to tell about our adventures up in Canada. And, of course, they've curtained off the entire room next door. I guess they want to surprise me with the dancers I haven't seen in so many months. It'll be good to see them again, and everything is pretty much set on this end. So how about I read a couple of letters, and then, I can't see anybody, so I can't get the nod, but I think if I read a couple of letters, what's going to happen is we'll go into the feature and cut the list of Starbucks potential places to go to 8 from 16. And for those who don't know what this is all about, basically I've never been to a Starbucks in my entire life. We started at the beginning of the year with every single Starbucks in the world, and we've been basically chopping that list in half various weeks randomly. And now we're down to 16. And I have to go to whichever one turns out to be number one, which will be decided on December 7th. Is that clear enough?
I think it's clear.
All right.
I think we're ready.
The question I can't answer is why, but, you know, we can theorize about that for a long time. This is from our good friend Shem over in Germany. Have you considered the possibility that the Starbucks that ends up being the final one on your list might close down before you get there?
Have you? That's a good question.
That is a good question. Well, he only asks good questions.
Yes, he does.
We see him at the CCC Congress in December, and we'll be sure to congratulate him on that good question when we see him. To answer the question with an even better answer than the question, well, you know what? If that happens, then the runner-up will win. Well, should it be the runner-up, or should it be the next closest one? You know what? That's not going to happen, okay? We're not going to let that happen. We're not going to...
They're opening Starbucks.
Yeah.
I mean, really? Are they closing?
Well, things do close.
Okay.
Things do close.
All right.
Hey there, long-time listener, first-time emailer that I can remember. I live in a small town called Beaumont, which is only a few minutes away from Redlands. Redlands being one of the Starbucks. In fact, Kyle, can you read the list? Let's read the list of the 16 cities really quickly.
Sure.
All right, go ahead.
Cities and states.
Yes, and provinces and countries, if applicable.
Well, absolutely. Yeah. Correct. I'm sorry about that. San Diego, California, College Park, Maryland, Edmonton, Alberta, Dubai, UAE,
mm-hmm.
Chicago, Illinois, Roseville, California, St. Peter's, Missouri, Sherwood, Oregon, Redlands, California, Hong Kong, China, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, Newport Beach, California, Toronto, Ontario.
Ontario.
I was just there.
Not the female version, yes.
Yes, and Rancho Cordova, California, Luzerne, Switzerland, and Denver, Colorado.
I think there's three in California. There's an inordinate number of foreign ones, And it's interesting. Now, this person, Sean, is writing in about the Redlands, California Starbucks. He lives in a small town near it. If luck should have it, and you do go there for your first Starbucks, I'll do my best to be there to buy you a cup, although I can only buy you the coffee to go in it if I get paid the week before, which is quite likely. I have been putting this email off for a while. I'm not sure why, but your speech about not worrying about and just getting things done has made me pause the podcast and get out of bed and write this before I finish and sleep. I like when people tell us everything they're doing as they write a letter.
That's cool.
Yeah, no, it's great. Thanks for the radio show. It's what inspired me to go into audio technology and become certified.
Whoa.
That's something, yeah. I might have read some of these letters before, but I think they're all of interest. Dear Emmanuel, with all the excitement of the Starbucks Final 16, it has been a little while since we heard Kyle and yourself in the Balkans. Was it Albania you were going to next? Yes, this letter actually came before the Albania shows aired, so yes, you are quite correct in that statement. Whilst listening to Kyle and yourself, it became apparent that recording the commentary of experiences is a really good way of preserving memories. With the explosion of digital cameras, most people, myself included, will be taking photos and whilst picture. All right, you used it twice. That's.
Can you say whilst?
Whilst? I don't think you should. Whilst pictures tell a thousand words, it doesn't leave much of the imagination like listening to a recording. I am intrigued and would like to try this. I was wondering if you are able to share with us the name of the recording equipment you use on your travels. Obviously, we don't want you to be seen as promoting any product on the show, so perhaps you can share with us the name, but no details on quality, etc. Well, I use an iRiver recording device. I've had it for a number of years. It's basically a hard drive. I think it's, 40 gigs I have or something like that, and an external microphone. I don't recall the name of the microphone. Do you?
Yeah, it's a Sony.
It's a Sony microphone.
Yeah, it's okay. A very small Sony microphone.
Very small. It's directional. You can have it either recording a 90-degree angle or 180-degree angle from where you hold it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's effective. So I can record on the external microphone or the internal microphone. And it's a nice, convenient way to go around and record things. That's how we record our audio, and we record radio, too, radio from various cities we go to.
There's a lot of different types of them out there, and we've actually marveled at some of the recorders that journalists have had. I remember we were in a train station, and we saw a really interesting one that was being used by the media there, and we were wondering what kind it was, because it was just sort of a metal box, and
had
microphone connectors to it, and there's a lot of really cool ones. It'd be interesting to find out what other people are using.
If you know of something out there that might be even better, and that doesn't make hard drive noise, which sometimes happens on the mechanical devices, write to us, otw@2600.com. Always looking for new bits of technology. Thanks, John from the UK, for that letter. Here's another letter from RX. Why are you spending so much time profiling the final 16 cities? Is this required as part of a settlement with the dancers and the injured drummer? No, on each of those, by the way. I appreciate hearing about the latest news and events in the hacking community and your particular spin on what these things mean, and when all else fails, hearing about your death trap of a car. referring to the Tercel with the broken control arms, which, by the way, Kyle, you took a look at those the new control arms.
Oh, those are some hot control arms.
Yeah,
those
work now.
Snazzy, boy. Wow.
But the other one snapped right in half, and wow, I was very lucky.
And I just want to interrupt, regarding the settlement, I mean, we can't even talk about it. Even if,
there was no settlement, okay? Everybody is friends. No, I'm not saying that because that's part of the settlement, but look, people kick people in the face all the time by accident. It happens.
Right.
It happened on the air a few months ago, and everybody's fine. And
all right.
Any injuries.
Well, sorry to interrupt.
I
didn't want to add anything, but.
I mean, people get all kinds of marks on their face that they take through life, and then they have stories to tell. So it's
I think it's sort of blown over.
It has. It really has. Let's not summon up those demons again.
Yeah, sorry.
Also, RX asked what happened to the smart car. You're going to find out what happened to the smart car in just a couple of minutes, because we have a story to tell there. Keeping the hacker spirit alive in Texas, of all places. Thank you very much for that letter. And finally, from Chris, if you come up to College Park, Maryland, check out the College Park Aviation Museum. The airport opened up in 1909, so the Wright brothers could instruct two government pilots on how to fly a plane, and started handling civilian flights in 1911. It was also the first airport to start airmail, and the first helicopter successfully took off, i.e. did not crash, from there in 1924. It also developed instrumental flight, and the museum is kind of neat as well. It's located next to the College Park Metro Station. Unfortunately, the old building for the B&O train station is long gone. If you do make it out there, pick up a copy of the Diamondback, which is the only daily college newspaper. Only daily college newspaper anywhere? I don't think so. I think we have daily news, daily college papers.
That's the name of the newspaper in Seattle for the UW.
The Diamondback?
The Daily.
Oh, The Daily. So that's probably a daily, too. Yeah, okay. It launched the careers of Aaron Magruder from Boondocks, who was one of our keynote speakers at Hope.
Oh, very cool.
And Frank Cho, Liberty Meadows artist for Marvel Comics. Thanks very much, Chris, for that. And speaking of Aaron Magruder, reminds me of Hope, and Hope reminds me of the fact that we're giving away Hope DVDs tonight on Off the Hook for anybody who pledges $75. To,
off the wall.
I'm sorry, off the wall. Wow. Thank you. Thank you for catching. I wonder how many times I say that. 631-632-9872. That's the only way you're going to get it at that kind of a price, for sure. $75. You'll get 40 DVDs. 40 DVDs. Each one. A talk or a section of a talk that has another DVD attached to it. They will all come to you if you pledge $75 to 631-632-9872 before this hour is up. And there are all kinds of other fantastic things that we have to offer. We have Finn in the other room who's going to take your phone call.
What's the phone number again?
631-632-9872, country code 1 if you're out of the country.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, so it's so confusing tonight because we have so many things going on, but I think we're just about ready, and we have some other things to talk about as well. So let's try and cut this list down as quickly as possible. And this is going to be exciting because of the cities you just named, Kyle, half of them are going to be gone in a few minutes, and half of them will remain.
Okay, I see a little movement from the curtain. I think they're getting restless.
There's a hand. Okay.
Yeah, okay.
And is that a countdown? Five. Okay. We're counting down now, and in a moment we'll be hearing once again the familiar sounds of the dancers as we start the quest for Starbucks. Whoa.
They changed the
Wait
format.
A minute. What's going on here? Who are these people?
Wait a minute.
Whoa.
Is this a different format?
Nope. This is the first I'm hearing of this. I'm seeing of this. No, he's good. There's no question about that.
I don't think that's the same.
No, obviously it's not the same. I mean, he's not wearing a dress for one.
Totally different dancing, totally.
And, you know, we have a no-dog policy in the station. It's a small dog, but still.
Yeah, what is that?
It's cool how he's able to sit on his shoulder like that, but that's. Yeah, I hope the building manager doesn't find out.
Wow. Did nobody contact you about this change? I mean, this is
they don't insane. Tell me anything around
what the
here.
Heck?
Oh, God, the mic's around. Hold on.
Oh. Oops.
And once again, we're here for the quest for Starbucks with a slightly different format. I just found out. It's nice, and it's also very long. We don't have very much time. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to bring you down as I noticed that that whole spread of dishes and things has replaced where the drummer sat. So, we don't have a drum. Kyle, I think, did I ask you to do this once before, the drum sound? Have I?
Okay,
you did
right.
A good job there. I'm going to need that.
Hold
practice,
on.
Practice.
Yeah,
I'm going to hit the button, and in a moment we'll have the details as to what the top eight are. This is unbelievable. You know, we really have to start sending email or something. Now, look at this. A human chain going around the room there. Wow, that's something. Be careful not to knock all the food over. And the dog stays on his shoulder the whole time. Wow. Okay, can you do the drum thing now, Kyle?
Are you ready?
Three. Oh, wait, the music's ending now. All right, well, that was something else. I got to say, I'm impressed. I'm not sure how I'm impressed, but okay. So now we're going to press the button to eliminate half of the Starbucks and bring it down to eight in 3, 2, 1. Okay, all right.
That's my best. No, I don't get anything
you know
else.
What? Thank you. That was good. Better than I could do. Better than anybody around here could do, I'll bet. All right. So here it is, the list. I'm going to read them one by one. I have it in front of me now. I'm covering up with my hands, so I'm learning this as you're learning this. All right? The first eight are the ones that have made it. You ready? Are you excited?
I am excited. I'm ready.
Number one, Newport Beach, California.
Cool.
Number two, Edmonton, Alberta. Congratulations, Edmonton. You're still in the running. Number three, Redlands, California. So two of the three Californias have made it.
There's a lot going on in California.
Quickly, yeah.
It's going to be tough not to end up there. Go ahead.
Number four, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. All right. Number five, Sherwood, Oregon.
Wow, okay.
That's close to your hometown of Seattle. Yeah, it looks like the West Coast is definitely, everything here is to the west. Nothing overseas yet.
Yeah.
I mean, one in Canada, but nothing overseas, and there's only three left.
All right, continue.
Only three left. Number six, Rancho Cordova, California.
Wow.
All of the Californias have made it.
Can't escape it.
I think I see a theme here. Okay, only two left. Will Dubai make it? Will Luzerne make it? Well, let's find out. Number seven. Oh, Hong Kong. What about Hong Kong?
Yeah, Hong Kong.
Number seven. San Diego, California. You know what? I forgot about San Diego. That's four Californias, and they've all made it.
Wow.
This is something else. And the final one. This is the last one of the eight. The final eight. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right. Maybe another drum roll?
Right.
Thank you very much. Number eight. College Park, Maryland. Wow.
All in the U.S.
No, except for Edmonton, Alberta. They're all in North America.
They're all in North America.
The ones that have been eliminated are Luzerne, Switzerland, Hong Kong, China, St. Peter's, Missouri, Roseville, California. There was another California. One California got eliminated. Chicago, Illinois, Dubai, United Arab Emirates, Denver, Colorado, and Toronto, Ontario. Our condolences to those places.
Yeah.
And some of them are places I really wanted to go to. I would have loved to have gone to Dubai to walk into my first Starbucks or even Luzerne, Switzerland or Hong Kong, places I've never been. But again, the finalists, Newport Beach, California, Edmonton, Alberta, Redlands, California, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, Sherwood, Oregon, Rancho Cordova, California, San Diego, California, and College Park, Maryland. So in rather a surprise twist, things have gone right back to North America, and all those that inordinate number that I referred to earlier of foreign Starbucks, well, it's kind of been given a swift kick in the behind.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
I feel it. You know, but you know, the best choice will probably be what's meant to be ultimately. You know, it'll be interesting.
Okay, they're clearing out of the room in there already, and I guess we're not going to get an outro out of them. But that's fine with me because we have a lot to talk about. In fact, some of them just left. We have a couple things to talk about. We only have 15 minutes left in the show.
Yeah, please go on.
Now, we were in Canada. The reason we went to Canada was to get the smart car fixed because the smart car was broken. It's been broken ever since, when was that? June that the first problem happened with the fuel pump or whatever that was?
May, June.
Yeah. Now, what's interesting about that is that the warranty ran out in June. When we were up there, we had to drive the thing up to Canada in what you refer to as limp mode.
Correct.
Because I guess it just wasn't communicating properly with the electronics in the car, and it just had to drive in a not very good way. We made it all the way up to Canada, got it to the dealership, and they looked it over and said, wow, this thing needs a brand new computer, and it's going to cost you $3,000. To have it all installed. And, of course, literally days after the warranty runs out, that's when the computer fails. You got to wonder about this. So we basically had to leave the smart car there over Thanksgiving weekend, which in Canada is in early October. And that's when we were wandering around. We went to Quebec City, went to Toronto, various other things. But really what wound up happening was we had to become pests as far as getting the car back because it just kept getting postponed and we had to get back to this country and it just seemed like it was never going to end and we weren't really sure what was going on. In the end, they said they were having trouble keying, getting a code for the key. Kyle, can you possibly explain what it was they were talking about?
Yeah, they had to rekey the new computer with your old keys. So the basically so that your keys would work in the old ignition. Otherwise, they would have had to change your ignition to match new keys. So they take the old keys, and they didn't touch the ignition. They just needed to reassociate your old keys with this new computer, because what a lot of new cars have, actually they've been doing this since about 1998, they have this technology called an immobilizer, and there's actually several generations of immobilizers now. There's three generations of immobilizer standards, and it's quite common. And basically, if you use some other source of physical key, by not having the right electronic key associated or in the vicinity of the ignition, the car won't start. And it's a way of verifying. So, you know, you could have the metal teeth of the key physically in the ignition, and you could turn it, but if the electronics of that key are not near the ignition, there's like RFID, like radio, sort of a passive signal that's or a passive radio bit in the key that is energized by the ignition to say, hey, are you an allowed key to be using this ignition? And the key, once it is programmed properly, will say the right code back to the ignition, and then it'll allow you to actually turn on the car. Otherwise, you just get some security thing, and it won't start.
Okay, so my question is, how come these people at the dealership, when they gave us a new computer and they had to like insert this new code into the key, why couldn't they just do it immediately? Why do they have to wait? When we got there, they said, well, we can only get 10 possibilities sent to us by this other part of Mercedes, and they're the ones that will give us the code, but they're not responding to us. Basically, they were complaining to us that they weren't responding to each other, and we had to sit around literally all day insisting that we get the car back that day because we needed to get back home. This had already been going on for almost 2 weeks. And how is that so hard to do, to get the key, to get the code for the key?
So a lot of modern cars have all these computer systems in them, and there's things you can fix on cars, even electronic things like physical computers. You could get a new computer and install it yourself, but there are codes and there are testing bits of software and testing equipment that only the dealers have access to, and those devices that interface with the vehicle computer system oftentimes have to be calibrated or get information sent to them from a centralized system. And we actually didn't know this. We had to get we had to dig up some information on how Mercedes is actually doing this, and the codes are and of course we were getting different information from our representative that was handling the repair. And basically they get they make a request through their internal system somehow, and a batch of codes is sent from Germany to a single third-party computer sort of distribution place that handles these kinds of codes and software things. Then that company sends a fax or some sort of communication to the dealership, and the dealership gets to run those 10 codes through their proprietary testing or interface device, and if they don't work, they have to do the same thing and get the codes directly from Germany sent to the third-party person, then they send them to the dealer, and then that is then tested. And of course, we don't have, and this is all dealership interface equipment, mm-hmm. So even their own equipment has to be talking or has to have current stuff from a centralized location.
This is all access control. This is all designed to keep the power out of the hands of the consumer, out of the hands of the independent mechanic. And I think this is what we learned on this trip, was how pervasive that particular system is. I mean, I was commenting to you that this computer failed, and this cost an immense amount of money to fix, and this whole key system, I'd prefer the keys that you just put in a door and turn, and I know it's, oh, someone might steal the car if you do that, but I'd rather take that risk than have to sit around for an entire day with these idiots and wait for them to figure out how to open up their own damn car and get it started. The thing that failed on the car is something that a car 10 years earlier wouldn't have even had. It wasn't any particular type of major mechanical piece of equipment that failed. It was the computer that controlled all sorts of things. And cars got along just fine without computers before. And this kind of thing just really leaves me with a sour feeling, I got to say.
So. Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, there was there's, you know, the physical problem with the car, like the fuel pump was problematic at one point, and this led to fail, and the reason that failed was because of a relay, and the relay was controlled by the computer, and you know, the bypassing of it and all of that was a temporary fix, but in reality the relay was affected, and running it, you know, it worked okay, but it ended up that you know, it just basically overheated, or somehow this was damaged prior to even bypassing it. I don't think any of the troubles that you had after we sort of got it running down here, I don't think that really led to this. I think something failed. It may have made it a little worse, but it's just uncanny that, like, you can't just replace a fuel pump and then have it work, but that fuel pump is tied to some central thing, mm-hmm. that if it gets a little bit of heat or something, it affects this entire system.
I think a date just passed on the computer, and it said, it's time to shut down now and make this poor fool drive and pay a lot of money. but thanks to Kyle, we actually got the old computer back from these people. Tomorrow and off the hook, we might even open it. We'll see about that. You want to just...
I've got a box here. And
yeah, it's tomorrow. But we have another story to tell now, because we had to get back into this country, and boy, what a pain in the ass that was. I'm used to it. This is your first time, Kyle. But basically, I want to be as specific as possible in the time we have left to tell people what happened to us. We were driving down after spending all day at the dealership trying to get our car back and finally figuring out how to do it. And driving back down, we decided to go by way of Vermont down Route 91. I'm used to being selected, pulled over, and interrogated. And I guess maybe the smart car was a little suspicious to them, since it wasn't in my name. But we've done this before. We had all the paperwork. Everything was there. But they still made us pull the car over and go inside and be interrogated for well over an hour in an extremely chilly room with the windows open. We had to sit right by the drafty windows while they sat with their space heaters on the other side. Occasionally just asking us all these questions. Oh, how did you two meet? Where are you coming from? How did you get, Kyle, how did you get to New York from Seattle? Like, no one's ever done that before. And it was just so ridiculously unpleasant. We had to empty our pockets. They demanded to know, who is this person that you have a business card for? What does this number mean? I had a number written on a piece of paper. I honestly didn't remember what it meant. It turned out it was a Wi-Fi password from one of the places we stayed at. But that was the level of interrogation that we had to be subjected to. Now, keep in mind, we've gone all over the world in all different countries. Some of them were at war with each other pretty recently. We've never been subjected to anything remotely close to this, except when entering our own country and being treated like prisoners. I don't know. What was your impression of that, Kyle?
I didn't like it. I mean, I don't know. How specific should I mention the officer's name that was
going? Sure, why not?
Well, there's this big guy, Ward, Ward was going through the overtime sheet, seeing you know, who was doing the best with overtime, and
Ward was his first name or his last name?
Last name.
Okay.
And he's a big guy, and he was learning about Windows too.
Uh-huh.
Earlier, he was learning this new software called Windows. And but anyway, he moseyed on or ambled over to the clipboard, pulled it off the wall, and he looked at overtime and was trying to see who's doing the best, and he was strategizing how he's going to work his overtime and his vacation. And it just dawned on me that I pay these people.
Mm-hmm.
I'm paying for this security, and this guy is sitting there trying to figure out, you know, how he can continue to make money by basically doing a job that, yes, was thorough, but to me was an inconvenience and invasive.
First of all, it wasn't thorough, because they could have gone a lot further into a lot of other details.
Okay,
and
see me.
I actually was unclear on a couple of things myself, because I honestly didn't remember. At one point, I said we stayed somewhere we didn't stay, because it was just being handed over so fast, and you felt like you had to answer immediately. And it makes you nervous.
It was seemingly thorough. And I think it's go ahead.
No, I'm just saying they forgot to give us our passports back, for one thing, and that's not
so
very
true.
Thorough. Yeah, so these guys, they don't even know what they're doing. But more importantly, if you had done this kind of questioning with Timothy McVeigh, with all the 9/11 hijackers, you know what? You wouldn't have gotten a single one of them, because they were all in the country legitimately, and they all had stories that they could use to make excuses for whatever it is they were doing. what in God's name are these people looking for? Why are we subjected, as American citizens, why are we subjected to this kind of treatment? Why are we put under arrest? Because we were. We had to sit down, weren't allowed to use the bathroom, had to answer all questions that were given to us, had to subject ourselves to searches. I'll tell you, I would not have let my computer be searched. I would have gone to jail before allowing them to type in a password. I would not have told them a password. That's where I draw the line. But everything else, we were very polite. We were very we gave them the information they wanted, but we were still treated like garbage.
And when you're treated like a criminal, you start second guessing yourself. You start saying, mm-hmm. "Well, is there something that I need to be worried about?" And you know, just making you sit there for, you know, 80 minutes, you know, just with, you know, not saying anything, not access to anything. You have no idea what they're looking at. They don't tell you what they're doing. They don't walk you through the process. They just sit there behind their screens. They look like a bunch of teenage girls going through their my book or whatever sort of social networks. They look like they're, you know, going through people's profiles. But, you know, it's not amounting to much. They can't find anything. Everything was legit. That was the only thing mm-hmm. that kept me going through that. And I just remember answering the questions very succinctly, enunciating, giving them yes, sir, the understood and correct, those kind of responses.
You were very good for your first time. I got to say, you kept your cool. And one thing we did, we're sitting there next to us on next to each other on this bench, this hard wooden bench right next to the open window where it was something like 35 degrees outside. We didn't say a word to each other. And I think that's very important that you not do that, because they're watching you. There was this one guy there the whole time, and he was the nice guy. When I said, yeah, I'm bringing back Canadian ketchup for my friends because, well, they just prefer the taste, and I like to do nice things for my friends.
He was a nice cop.
He was the good cop, but he was no better than anybody else.
Is he the one disassembling daisy chains of paper?
Well, that's what he was doing.
Yeah,
he basically asked about the Canadian ketchup, and I explained it to him. And then for the whole rest of the time, while the other people were tearing apart the car and leaving a mess, leaving a complete mess. For instance, I found a Bosnian train ticket on my driver's seat, like it was some kind of comment or something, because they went through everything in our bags. He was watching us while they were doing this and not doing anything, but actually I knew he was keeping an eye on us. He was literally taking apart paper clips from a chain. He was sorting Band-Aids. He was doing all kinds of nonsense work. And when you think of it, somebody had to put the paper clips in a chain. That's probably what he did the last time he interrogated somebody.
So, yeah, we told our story like three times, and in the way they wanted to hear it, they got to ask everything they wanted, and they found nothing.
Mm-hmm, absolutely
nothing. We're American citizens. We should be able to come in and out whenever we want with zero trouble.
And no apology, nothing like that. Okay, you can go now. You know, I want a damn apology this time. I'm really fed up with this.
Oh, and you have to remind them to give you your passport and your license back?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, anyway, I thank them for their hard work.
Because you are a polite person.
You got to play the game.
And I held
play
my tongue.
The game.
I held my tongue, but we don't like the game, and we're going to fight the game. And we're going to win the game, folks. We're going to talk about this some more tomorrow on Off the Hook. But, Kyle, it's been a pleasure, as always. And we'll see you next time you're here in the Stony Brook area.
Absolutely. And I'll be back.
Yeah,
I love this place.
Try to stay out of trouble in the remaining
time. Oh, I will misbehave.
All right. We'll see you next week. Good night.
So long.